guys, and welcome back for another episode of the Social Hour Podcast, a podcast for sewists by sewists. I'm your host, Ashley.
And I'm your host, Bethany. And on today's episode, we have the duo that is Sewn Adaptive, Alex and Lynn. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi there.
We're so excited to have you both and appreciate you carving out some time. I know you've been super busy lately, and we're excited to hear all about the things that you've been doing. But before we dive into our chat, can you guys give our listeners a little bit of a synopsis of what Sewn Adaptive is?
So Sewn Adaptive is a tailoring and alteration service specifically built around the needs of people with disabilities. So we tailor and alter clothes or make custom clothes, custom accessories that help people with disabilities feel more confident in their clothing, help them get along better in their day-to-day lives with more comfort and just confidence. And we're located in Pasadena, California, our storefront, but we also help people online all the time.
That's amazing. I cannot wait to hear how you got to this journey, because I think it's just so special. It's just it's clearly something that's needed, and I'm so glad that you guys are doing that. But before we dive into how you got to where you are now and what you're doing now, I'd love for each of you to kind of give us a little information on who you are as individuals, because you guys were doing sewing on your own before you came together for Sewn Adaptive. So either one of you want to go first?
You go ahead, Lynn.
Well, I have been sewing since I was 7 years old. And Sewn Adaptive came about was I have been a costume designer for film and television since 1996. And here in Los Angeles, and Alex and I happened to meet kind of happenstance. My husband is a piano mover, and Alex had a factory that actually was at the end of our block that nobody in the neighborhood knew was even there. And he had a day where he was bringing an industrial machine in or something, and it was just himself. And so we decided to walk down the street to see if there was, you know, any burly guys out there that could help him move the machine. And he happened to run into my husband painting the fence and asked my husband if he could help him move the sewing machine. And at first, my husband's instinct was no, because I do this for a living. But when he said it was a sewing machine, he knew his wife would kill him if he didn't help him. So he helped him. He walked into his factory, saw all the machines, and came home and was like, "You got to meet this guy." And we did, and started working together. Did I cover that?
I think you. I think you did. You did a really good job covering it. But you got to talk more about you too, like your experiences.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, first of all, I love the story of how you two met. Like, total happenstance. Like. And Ashley and I have a similar story of like how we met. It was just like a fluke of connection through the internet, you know, and you just never know where those opportunities are going to take you.
Right.
So it's really cool to hear that. So yeah, let's dive in, Lynn. I know you've done a lot.
Okay. So I started costume designing professionally in 96. Prior to that, I had sewn, you know, custom apparel for people in the areas where I was living to help support my family. I have three grown children now and four granddaughters and a grandson on the way.
Yay. Congrats.
Thank you. So I've been sewing since I was young. Part of my story is that I was diagnosed severely dyslexic as an adult. So prior to that, sewing was the thing that I did by myself. Nobody knew about. I made my clothes, but I never shared about that because it was something that I could do and fail privately. So
yeah, I get
miraculously,
that.
I kept trying. And it's the thing I love to do more than anything. And I think it's the thing that gave me the greatest sense of self-worth as a young adult.
It built your confidence.
Right.
Clearly.
And when I started sewing professionally, I mean, it was out of necessity that I contribute. So, I mean, it was my one skill set. Anyway, did a bunch of costume design for commercials specifically. I designed the Intel Bunnymen, which was in the 90s, their big icon. Yeah. And I did all their print television ads. And in that year, the Smithsonian Institution was having their 125th anniversary of Business in America. And they approached all these, you know, the iconic businesses, and at that time was Intel. And the costume I made for Andrew Grove, who was at the time the CEO of Intel, wore the Bunnymen costume to that year's Comdex, and they took that costume, and it's a permanent archive in the Smithsonian.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
So that's my
A lifetime achievement.
That's how I got discovered, if you would. And then from then, started to do film, was grandfathered in from one of my directors into the Costume Designers Guild, and have been a union costume designer and wardrobe stylist since then.
Wow.
I found Instagram and sewing only 6 years ago. Totally by accident. And I've just loved being able to have friends and community that love the thing that I love so much.
Isn't it great to be able to connect with others through that social platform that like Ashley and I have been doing this for almost a year now, our podcast and I was already a part. We were both already a part of the sewing community that around us, but the way that this podcast has allowed us to expand our reach into the community and then also collectively bring the community together to learn from one another and everybody's different, you know, sewing backgrounds and niches and expertise and experiences and life. It's just been really, really fun. So it's great to hear that you had that experience of being able to like build this community in your own way through social media because before, you know, you said sewing was very individual for you, like
nobody my age sewed at all. No.
But then you expand your reach and you're like, oh, right. I'm not alone.
Right.
And that's really special. So that's amazing. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize just how far you had reached. Like that's a huge lifetime achievement that you made.
Yeah.
Like that's amazing. And it just opened so many doors for you. So that's so cool. Now, Alex, I know you've got some experience with sewing too. So we'd love to hear your kind of backstory as well.
Well, I started sewing when I was a teenager. I was like making things growing up, whether that was like woodworking or just anything that involved making things. But I really found with clothes that you could make things that people could wear, that people could feel and actually, you know, make them feel different. So that was something that resonated for me and made me stick with sewing. After high school, I went to FIT in New York and studied fashion design out there, and then went to Italy for a while to train in tailoring. And so I really refined the tailoring skills while I was out there. I came back to the U.S. after a couple of years and decided that I would open a clothing factory out here. I was really cocky and I thought I could do it. You know, I could do it better and faster than everybody else. And so I opened a small clothing factory out here. And the idea was that I could create a clothing company that would produce basically, you know, any type of small run clothing. And it would be, you know, the people who would work with me would be people who were, you know, fresh out of high school, who maybe didn't want to go to college just yet and were looking for jobs. And I could train them and they would work and then they would have a skill set to take to college. And so it was kind of this beneficial circle of making things and trying to get that all working. And it was good for I think about 5 years while I was running it. And you know, and it's a really stressful industry working in mass production. So I decided that that maybe wasn't the angle I wanted to go, but I didn't know where to go with it. So I was sort of in this, in between in my life.
Like limbo?
Limbo, exactly. Yeah. I didn't know quite what to do. And that's when I had met Lynn's husband, who connected me with Lynn. And Lynn had, at that time, just gotten the... gotten a job for Cirque du Soleil
Trisha's who introduced us to you and you both in Sona Adaptive. And so I was like, when I kind of did some research on you guys, you know, I snooped a little, I was like, we have to have them.
Trisha's actually going to come visit us here tomorrow.
Amazing. Yeah.
No, well, we're excited.
Give our love to her. She's fabulous. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Alex. I just, when you mentioned Trisha, I was like, yes, she is the one that put you all in front of us. And so we're grateful for that.
We're very appreciative of Trisha. She's always been incredibly helpful with stuff. Like I the other day I had an issue where I couldn't figure out something about a pattern. Just usually I can, and my ego is so huge that it's like, oh no, I can do it. And I was like, no, I should just call her. I'm glad I did.
Mine's the opposite. I can't do it. Will you show me how to do it?
Trisha's great, and that's. We started working on the Cirque du Soleil costumes, and when we started working on the Cirque du Soleil costumes, which was an incredibly invasive amount of time and energy to do that. I mean, it's a lot of work. We started working on Runway of Dreams, and I got a call, and they said, "Hey, we're looking for a tailor in Los Angeles. It's for this foundation. They're really cool. We need you to like tailor. It's like over 200 alterations. You only have like a day and a half to do it,
You
have to do the fittings, and you have to organize it. And we're probably going to need you to bring all your equipment to this." Hotel, like kind of a ballroom.
Right.
And so I said, well, you know, I'm not like a tailoring service. And they're like, yeah, no tailoring service is going to do it. And I'm like, of course not. And so we're calling factories. And I'm like, the factories are going to do it. And I'm like, yeah, of course not. You know, and I was in this limbo where I really wasn't doing anything at the time. I was sort of like, I'm not feeling the factory anymore. It's exhausting. I'm kind of burnt out and I don't know what I'm going to do. So I'm just going to hang out and live it up a little bit. And then I got that call and I thought, okay, well, you know, let's do this weekend. That'll be a fun thing. And so we did it, and yeah, reeling all the equipment out there, made a little factory inside of a hotel ballroom, and I didn't
have to
clean up the mess, so it's fine with me, all the threads in the carpet, which was not my problem, it was somebody else there. And so we did that, which went really well. We totally fell in love with the entire group of people that put it on, the whole mission of the company. You know, they put on this adaptive runway show for people with disabilities, showcasing the new adaptive clothing through different brands like Tommy Hilfiger, Kohl's, Target, JCPenney, big brands, and also up and coming brands like No Limits, who are, you know, really creating adaptive clothing, making it more accessible. Mm-hmm. But there's still such a big need, and those brands recognize that. So it's not any sort of a bash on anybody. They all recognize where fashion has to go. But also coming from a manufacturing background, I understand exactly how hard it is to introduce a new kind of clothing that is parallel to the others, both financially and just practically. And
people with disabilities, everybody's disability is a little different, right? So their needs are going to be different. So that's when you're getting into more like custom versus batch, you know, making.
The thing is that, you know, everybody's just as much as you're, it's kind of like if you make a pair of pants, you're trying to sell that to somebody or just the general public, you know, how many people out of 100 are going to want that pair of pants? Now, how many cut that demographic into a quarter? And that's the disability community. And so, you know, it's a really hard sell in general if you're just making one pair of adaptive pants. So it's kind of like the solution we found was the only way to do it is to take everything and have it, you know, have the possibility of being tailored. And we recognize as people who not only make our own clothes, but when we buy it, generally tailor our own clothes to fit us just even a little bit. And so we jumped on that, but we just felt like there was such a need for that. Mm-hmm. So that's why we came together on this. You know, we love the mission behind it. We just felt like there's so much opportunity and need, and we've seen that reaffirmed in our day-to-day working lives in this industry. And we dabble in a lot of stuff. I mean, just all kinds of things, but really the adaptive is what we...
And everything out there, nothing was like really fashionable. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like basics mm-hmm. covered. And it's, you know, all of us. All of us mm-hmm. want to look good. We want
we use clothes to express ourselves too.
Exactly.
You know, it's how, you know, the clothes you choose to put on, kind of like, at least for me, and I feel like a lot of people feel this way, is, you know, if I feel comfortable and confident in my clothes, it's going to carry me through that confidence through the day. Mm-hmm. And so not, you know, when you have a disability, sometimes that confidence is already, you know, struggling. So to be able to put on clothes that make you feel confident, it kind of builds that up. And I don't know, I just think it's so special that you guys are creating things mm-hmm. that are, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how to word it. Maybe you have a better way of wording it than I do, but it's just really sweet. It's really a selfless act. Mm-hmm. Especially to take on that event last minute that you did. I mean, you just dove right in and said, let's try this. And it stuck. So from there, like, that's where kind of the bug was caught, I guess. And you developed Sewn Adaptive. What made you decide to make this like your full-time focus?
Well, I think what made us want to make it the full-time focus was after the runway show, you know, we were absolutely exhausted. It was like two all-nighters to get it done.
Yeah.
And so we thought,
and I'm too old for that mess. But anyway.
But you did it. Like that. And, you know, we brought all the machines back to the factory. But it was, you know, we got to go to the show. We got to enjoy that and mm-hmm. be there. And it was meaningful for people attending or being in mm-hmm. the show. It was meaningful for people attending. The mission behind it was good. It didn't feel to me like it was, because I can be a very skeptical person. So it didn't feel to me like it was this pandering thing or it was disingenuous. It was incredibly honest and it was clear and straightforward. But it also served a really great mission with a clear outcome. It wasn't like, oh, we're just putting on this show for the fun of it. It was showcasing what is adaptive that is, you know, somewhat available. And it was also showcasing that, you know, this is a demographic that needs this thing. So we had left that thinking, hey, that was a really good experience. Lynn, working in shows and TV and film, has had all this experience and definitely is, you know, that's a special type of person who is mm-hmm. able to function in film and television environments. I'm definitely that type of thing, or it's like, we're going to do this crazy thing in like a wild amount of time. It's like that to me, that's like super exciting. And like to other people, it's like, no, that's crazy. That doesn't sound fun. but I think for us and that's what makes us work together when we do film television work. But it's also what made us feel like, yeah, that experience that was so, you know, tiring, so exhausting, but rewarding, made us feel good at the end. I want to do that again. What length do I have to go to do that again?
Yeah.
And the fact that it is for the benefit of people, I think mm-hmm. made it kind of universally easier for us to try to put that together. The pieces kind of came together for it. We saw the
opportunity, having come from entertainment, fashion, and fashion. We saw an opportunity to make a real difference in an industry that is highly gate kept and highly, I'll say, competitive and mm-hmm. you know, being the next it and all that. And it's like there's a whole demographic that want to participate. And it's not like anything we're doing. I mean, it may break some of the rules of sewing and tailoring to some mm-hmm. degree, but at the end of the day, it's still a shape. It's mm-hmm. still a, you know, a pattern being drafted to accommodate that shape. Mm-hmm. Our whole thing was, and elevate the fashion. So it's not something medical. So it's not strictly, you know, snapped on like a hospital gown. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's like, you know, if you have a bag on the back, if you carry a fly purse, you carry a fly purse, you know, on your chair. Do you know what I mean? It's like there's just no reason for everybody to not get to have that. And we have the talent. We have the experience. He's got a whole lot of sewing machines. And so why not? And our kind of reverse engineering of saying to brands, you can utilize our service and we'll make any of your collection adaptive. So that's you don't amazing. Have to be weary about the cost of reinventing your collections to accommodate the disabled community. You continue to do you. You promote what we do, and we will bring you into the adaptive space.
That's amazing. So has that approach opened up that space significantly? Like, what has that reach been like for you all?
You know, there's a lot of, I wouldn't say pushback isn't the right way, isn't the right word. And skepticism, I think, is probably closer to that. But it's, you know, you're working with companies who have been... who are not quite there yet. You know, it's the adaptive environment is very much and is very much behind the movement is a little bit and that's not, you know, to discredit the efforts of the disability community, but rather just the way it's being perceived. You know, looking about other like inclusion rights, like gay rights, and how long ago that just started rolling in, but it's still working on it. You know, disability rights, you know, it kind of seems like you know, ADA laws were started or passed in 95. And it's like, you know, that's just a minute ago.
Yeah.
So
that's it.
Yeah. So it's, it, those are when, and that's why you go to a lot of places that are still, you know, that are really not accessible, because it's a lot of places and still are, but like, you know, we were built way before 95, you know? And so there's a lot of stuff that just isn't accessible. Like our shop is totally accessible. Once you get out front, but we tell people to park in the lot next door because the curb here is kind of high, you know, in Pasadena, and the curbs are like crazy high. And so,
but the store itself,
So, and you know, and that's the thing is like, that's the city won't cut out an extra thing here. They just won't do it. So it's like, we can't, you know, we can't, it's the best we can offer, you know? And it's like, we genuinely are so trying to, and that's the thing. So they're making an attempt, but the city still is like, look, we filled in the guidelines. They can park next door. There's a thing within 100, you know, there's all this regulation, you know, we can take it farther. We can do better. But the disability, the movement is still moving. And particularly within fashion, it's just budding. I would say in the last five years, it's like just picking up a little bit of traction. And it's you know, and I know I'm jumping around so much here, but it's like Lynn and I come from different backgrounds, so we can fight a lot about what the good next step is, because I come from very practical, like this is production, this production, and it helps for me to like be broken out of that for sure. But
sounds like you guys complement each other well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And both work really well under pressure, which makes you a really good team. From what I've heard, the really things that you've accomplished.
It makes us balanced. You know, we have a lot of balance too. And it's so when we work with companies, we reach out, it's like, I already know when we're calling like this big brand, I know why you're skeptical about this. You know, I understand what your brand is. I know, you know, you're a luxury brand. You don't want me touching any of your stuff. You know, it's like the idea of, oh, can we put a zipper in the leg so we can access like prosthetics on like some Coach pants? Absolutely not. You cannot cut my silhouette and put a zipper on there. If there was a zipper on there, designer would have put a zipper on there, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's where we hit, you know, this wall where it's like, you know, no, you cannot touch our, if the client wants to go take it to you, fine, but you can't touch our clothes.
We're not going to mass change them
audience. And they don't believe it can be done well, you know, and that's the thing is we create tons of samples showing
and they're
that
like, I'm here to prove you wrong.
And I feel like we have in a lot of circumstances.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, the obstacle that we face that is not a criticism, but a reality of bigger companies is the the bureaucratic system at those companies. You know, it has to go through so many channels and pass through so many people that even if
nothing happens quick.
Exactly. No. Somebody in marketing loves the idea of SonoAdaptive. Great. That has to pass through 40 channels. And everybody along the way has to be hot about it before it comes back as a solution.
Oh, I get it. I work for a corporation, so I totally get the Kool-Aid that has to be passed through all the channels.
So real.
And hope everybody likes what it tastes like, you know?
Yeah.
It's a struggle.
Exactly like that. So we've been pushing for things, but we try to, like, when we get that resistance, we think, great, we'll keep pushing for this, but let's try another angle at something. You know, maybe we explore the idea. We were pushing really hard for mass alterations. We still are. Thing, why don't we try for a little bit more in accessory customization? Things like now we're doing a lot of wheelchair backrest covers. Big, lot of big requests for those. You know, people want to be able to deck out their wheelchairs a little bit. And so that's been popular. And for now that works and it's helping the community and it's introducing what you can have, which is so important. I think
that's another thing that we have noticed in our year and a half-ish time is that not only are brands not aware, but even the disabled community is unaware of what they could have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They've never had it. They've never had it offered to them. And so, you know, we'll go to events and we'll bring samples of adapted ready to wear, you know, regular brands, Gap, Zara, whatever, and we'll do the adaptions. And they literally will have like that mind blown look on their face because it's like, you know, the zipper is hidden or the button's actually a magnet or you know what I mean? And they, you know, or just a simple thing as a high low hemline to a shirt for a person who is seated, they have a ton of fabric right there at their waist that they're wearing regular ready to wear on their pants, on their shirts, on their jackets, and just changing that proportion slightly by like maybe 4 inches makes all the difference in that, you know, that first view. And, you know, that's the other thing for us from a design standpoint is, you know, typically it's like Alex doing a pair of pants. It's, you know, you're designing for two positions. You're designing for the standing or the seated. Well, with a lot of people with mobility, it's seated. That can be a different silhouette, but but looking straight on, you know, it's the same as everything else, but there's tweaks that go into, you know, shortening the rise, you know, bringing it up in the back, you know, removing excess out of in the pattern, like right at the crotch line, because nobody's ever going to stand up. So, you know what I mean? All these things that it's like we're learning as they're learning, but it's literally too, just getting them to understand, like, no, what do you want? Like, not what
they have options now.
Not what can I have? It's what do you want?
Yeah.
And they don't know what they want though sometimes because they don't know what exists.
Well, they do from a standpoint of if they deal with specific challenges, they know things that, you know, that aren't working.
Yeah, I was going to say, they kind of work backwards. It's like, well, what I don't like is how when I'm seated, they're so tight in my stomach, you know, like maybe we let out the waist. Cause the, you know, when even now I'm sitting and I'm wearing a pair of jeans and I'm like, these are not as comfortable as when I was standing up, you know?
And imagine you have to wear it. You have to be seated all day long.
All the time.
But you want to wear jeans.
We don't think about
because they're stylish.
Back pockets on jeans. We don't think about those being abrasive. It's one layer of fabric at most tiny spots.
Right.
And so we don't think too much about it, but it's like, you know, those a lot of times we remove for our wheelchair clients because
it'll wear down the seat too.
It'll it'll give them kind of like a sores. You know, it starts to and you wouldn't think from such
just a thin
layer,
bump.
But it's very real, especially with cargo pockets, things that are bigger in the back. Can be very uncomfortable over a long period of time, or can cause other problems, especially for people who may not have feeling. You know, they don't notice that there's a problem.
So they don't realize the sore, it might be.
Or any sort of an abrasion from something. You know, those can go unnoticed, which can cause an infection or a problem. And so it's a very real thing. So sometimes it gets a little bit medical with the way we look at the solutions, but but it's just the reality, you know, and that idea of some things don't work for you. I mean, that's a universal thing, man. There's just some things I shouldn't be wearing, you know, like, you know, with a disability or not. And so,
yeah, I think we all have things, especially as sewists, garment sewists, you kind of learn like your body type and what looks good on your shape.
Absolutely.
And I have learned that that is not skirts. I do not pull off skirts. I have like this most straight shape, and it just amplifies that. So I'm not a big fan of skirts on me. But you know, it's just like, that's one example of like, you know, but then Ashley, she looks fabulous in skirts because she has curves that I don't, you know, I mean, truly, Ashley. So, you know, there's, you just learn like what, so now you all are learning and what looks good on people, or what shapes, different shapes look good on people with disabilities. But then they're also learning about that, about themselves through this process, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And I love earlier, Lynn, how you said, you know, sometimes we have to break the rules, and I'm a big fan that rules are meant to be broken.
Yeah.
You know, who just because it's in a textbook that someone wrote and maybe we studied in fashion school does not mean that that's the be all to end all.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, as a costume designer, that's a pretty no rules arena.
Anything's game.
Yes. I mean, that's how I really got into costume design, was with like Halloween costumes.
Right.
And I, unorthodox is the middle name. Yeah.
Now, Alex, with your more tailored skill set background, do you find it challenging sometimes to bend those rules, or are you sometimes pushing against those, or have you kind of let that go a little bit? Yeah, and Lynn's laughing.
I definitely have a problem sometimes with letting go of the very rigid way that I've learned how to do. Yeah, it's just the tailoring stuff. It's very, you know, it's very traditional, but it's more so, I think what sticks harder is the, because the tailoring, there's even solutions within there. It's like, I'm going to do this a little differently today. There's, there's various solutions, the same thing. In production, it always, and I feel like doing it for so many years, and I still get called on to do production jobs, whether I'm the one doing managing the production or I'm going as a consultant. So the first thing to me is always, what's it going to cost? How much time are you spending on it? You know, and I have to check myself. Like I'm even, you know, sometimes I'm like, I'm working too long on this project, or I look at Lynn, I'm like, you're still working on this thing? Like as if you get paid hourly, you know, it's like, that's not how this is, but it's like, that's how I'm always like the value, the cost of the item versus how much time. And it always has to correlate. So if there's a solution for the adaptive item that's being brought in, it's like, great. What's the best way, but most cost effective middle to do this? And it's a good way of thinking about it when you present it to brands, because, you know, the minute, and this is something that I've learned working with Lynn and being introduced to the home sewing community. I had not used ever a home sewing pattern until like 6 months ago. Like we did a video about it. It was like,
I'd never even seen it.
Never ever. We just manufacturing and home sewing are not anywhere near each other. Like so far away from each other. It's not even funny. It's like, as soon as I see Lynn picking up a needle and working on a project, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, there's no reason for you to be using a hand needle. We do not use that
at
all.
It's not efficient, right?
But with some beading, I mean, you just...
Completely...
I've taught him a whole lot about...
Yeah, well, I mean, like, the beading...
Rhinestones.
Yeah, the beading, the rhinestones, things like that. I would have been like, that is a ridiculous amount of time. Can't do that. So, I mean, I've definitely slowed down a lot in my technique and things, but still, yeah, with the production stuff, it's like, it is hard sometimes to be like, you know, let's do this, or we could just do this, and it's like, wow, that seems like a lot of time.
So Lynn's going, how can I present this to him and to make it seem more efficient so he'll be on board?
No, I know it's bad when I'll hear like, don't hate, but, and it's like, I'm going to hate this.
Hear me out. This is my vision.
But it's, you know what? It's been a lot of fun. I mean, it's been a lot of fun, obviously, like we said, to just gain friends on social media around sewing, and, you know, people who have been using Big Four patterns for myself, it's 4 decades, you know what I mean? And to, I mean, he's such an anomaly, because literally he had, I was like, here, you got to check these out. And he was like, what is this? I mean, when he pulled out the tissue, he was literally like, what is this? And oh, I was like, these are regular. I just couldn't believe that all of his sewing never forced him, you know, into a Joann's to have to do this. Yeah, no, I went to design school also later as an adult. I was the oldest one there, but all of my peers kind of all started like me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Their grandma taught them or something like that, you know? Not him. And I do have to make it a point to say this because, you know, the people that, you know, if you haven't followed Alex yet or you don't know who Alex is in the sewing community, because he doesn't come from the home sewing realm, you all haven't even seen a quarter of his talent. The fact that he is half my age and the amount of knowledge that he has is just straight up baffles me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, how can that be?
He was born with these talents,
right? Wildly talented.
He figured it out early. You figured out those talents early.
Yeah. Are you a genius?
Yeah. I'm obsessed over sewing, everything sewing. Like, it was just I'm like best friends with my sewing machine vendor. Like, it just literally.
That's a true statement.
We've done jobs together, projects together, and like all like, you know, I spend time there. I tell them, I'm just going to come to your shop, big warehouse. I'm just going to go look at everything and like ask you, like, what does this do? What does this do? Why would you? And just a million questions about stuff. We've done factory setups together, embroidery factory setups together. We've done so much stuff. And it's like, I've got a million questions. And I think he gets a kick out of it now. And I'm like, hey, if we, you know, random stuff, like if we hooked up this attachment to a cover stitch, couldn't you like infinitely make belt loops? And he's like, yeah, I guess you could. You could do that. You know? And I'm like, great. So that's an idea.
And see, that's another thing, like in the home sewing world where it's like your sewing machine only operates one way. Yes, you have additional feet that you can do things. Mm-hmm. But if anything isn't exactly the way they intended it, you have a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Stop, rethread, whatever. Mm-hmm. This guy's like MacGyvering industrials.
Well, they're meant to be. They're machines. Like, they're not sewing machines. They're like, they're different, right?
We use all these attachments and things like folders, binders, and there's there's hundreds and hundreds of types of each attachment for each type of machine. Feet, different, like, there's like thousands of different feet that you can get, different like binders. There's so many different things that we can alter. And then also, depending on the project, what you're making, and if you're making enough quantity, it's worth investing the time. It's like, you can bend little pieces of sheet metal into attachments that maybe help feed things better. And that, I mean, that's definitely something you pick up in the factories, is you're breaking down a project to each step. So that step so many times that it's like, how's the best, quickest way
efficient.
Like we have some that are like, you know, doing the felling seams for the shoulders of dress shirts, you know how tricky that is, but it's we have this attachment. So you just feed it all in at once and it does it. And it's a minute to rig up, but it's easy to do.
That helps you have like consistency in the quality of the product being made, right? And you're also probably have different skill levels of people sewing, right? Like there's some that are probably new, like you said, you've had to train people. So giving them these kind of tools helps them, makes it easier for them to get, you know, to learn to do it, but also gives you that consistency in the outcome of your product, right?
Yeah, right. No, and yeah, it's definitely, and it reflects on the work that we do. I mean, I definitely wouldn't sew as well as I do without the attachments that I use. You know, the tools are really important. And all those, it's funny because a lot of the people that have worked at my shop have gone on to, you know, either continue to sew personally. Like my brother is now going to college, and he sometimes has to sew for his like creative classes for shoe design. And so he'll come in and still work, even though it's been years since he has used the equipment. So he'll come in, and when he like took sewing classes at his college, they were like, wow, you do really well. And he's like, yeah, well, I used to work at a factory. So, and I've had like old people, they would go to like college or, you know, into life and would start doing alterations on the side for just cash because they'd learn how to do it. So, you know, it's good to be able to pass that.
And he has, you know, I'd been a piece rate sewer, tiny little chapter back in the day, at a factory. So I understood how to use industrial, and I had some industrial when I went to school. I owned an industrial for a minute, but I was kind of locked into the Bernina machine that I had had forever. We came together. It has been like back to school for everything. And I have to say, you know, because of my disability, there's a lot of behind the scenes things that people have no idea what that struggle looks like and the things I have to do to compensate and cope. And and he has had to put up with, I mean, I will say I did come clean like early in our relationship, like, this is a thing for me, FYI, it may become a problem for you. And, I mean, he'll regularly have to do things to help accommodate my disability for me to basically relearn sewing on all the industrial machines. You know, he'll label pedals for me.
That's awesome.
Because I cannot, like, will not ever remember my left from my right. That's just... Mm. You know,
it's interesting.
You got a 50-50 every day, you know, and he'll do all kinds of little extra things because he knows, I mean, you know,
it's
like Groundhog Day around here. And it makes it more efficient for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he's being adaptive to you, just like he's being adaptive to the community and it looks different for everybody.
Right.
So it's funny. I'm more like you, Lynn. I went to fashion school, so I got exposed to industrials there.
Right.
But then, fast forward, had a whole different career. But then I started working temporarily during COVID, at a high-end drapery shop here in Nashville, where we were doing like custom draperies for these like ridiculous places and the high rises downtown.
Right.
And, so I got back into using industrials again, and it was so much fun and I loved it, but I've always been like a home sewist because that's how I grew up with my mom and everything. But I just got my first industrial personally, so I can like get back into it, maybe like get more into like the bag making. I just don't like to ever feel like limited by what I can do and the materials I can work with. And even with some of my top of the line home sewing machines, domestic machines, there's still limitations because an industrial is just another beast, as you can attest to, Alex. And so I'm super excited. We're just becoming friends. We're just getting to know each other.
Yeah, he's like, oh, what kind of machine?
What kind of machine is this?
Gonna geek out. It's a Brother 7000 Double D 403.
Is that a walking foot? Did you get a walking foot?
I bought it off of a lady on Facebook Marketplace. So I don't have any of the accessories for it yet.
Can it come with a walking foot? Can you get a walking foot?
It's a Brother.
Brother
7000 Double D 403.
The fact that you know by like the numbers that it's a potentially a walking foot.
Well, and I was going to maybe talk to you offline because I've been struggling with finding bobbins and accessory feet. And I've reached out to
you're good because you're on the this machine is the what do you call it? It's like a universal, like a mono single needle. Our in home service call it straight stitch. Makes me lose my mind. It's called single needle. And so and so the single needle machines, they're pretty universal. You know, they have like the bobbins, cross Juki, Brother, Conso, whatever, they're gonna be the same. They actually also fit in any Brother Baby Lock product. A lot of people don't know you can swap those out. You know, you can use industrial bobbins in those.
I've been hearing something about Brother and Baby Lock being the same.
Yeah, baby lock. I don't know that you put the baby lock bobbins in the Juki, but you could definitely put the Juki bobbins in the baby lock. So the metal ones, you put them in there.
Yeah.
It's the problem is the Singer ones that are really fat and they don't fit in there. They can't close it.
Yeah.
So that one, feet from a Juki, feet from or built for Juki, Brother, whatever. Those will work. Attachments will work. Mm-hmm. That kind of that base where the needle, the presser foot, the bobbin case, and the screw holes that are on the side, those are all placed in the same area. Like, so that we can universally communicate is the only agreement between the sewing machines is to have like that one thing be the same. So any attachments you get, any type of feet that you get, which I use a lot of times, I get my supplies from like Alibaba has a whole ton of like for super cheap and like ridiculous attachments. Like, wouldn't you like to show this like weird ribbon on like a million times? Like, no, but I'll buy it for $2. And so, you know, I have like, I load bins of attachments, like any possible
not,
binding thing.
Not bins.
Bins. Like, so big bins.
So, yeah, I mean, I want to do a whole video about that because it's like, they're so attainable. They make your life, I mean, binding, like bias binding, it just, with the attachments, and your life is just so much easier. So much easier.
And it's perfect.
It's perfect every time, and it's a one step. You know, there's not like 9 steps to the whole thing, so it makes it a lot easier. There's so many perks to the industrials. Then there's different weights. You know, you can like we have 3 industrial single needles in here, and the first one is the new one. They're both lightweight.
We have the medium weight,
which is like for denim weight stuff, just really heavy. And you get up to heavyweight, which does like heavy duty leathers. And
I would like to know if you know my sewing machine.
Yes, what is it?
Yeah,
she has an industrial too.
It's a Mitsubishi DY340.
Oh, nice. The Mitsubishi's solid. My first car was a Mitsubishi. And it was
and this is my first car.
They're good. And they're also the only thing other than the Mitsubishi is people keep breaking off the little knobs on them. I don't know how they keep doing that, but it's like every time
mine's
I fix
like
those
50. Things, I don't have a manual. I'm pretty sure it's from the 70s. But
oh, it was colors are like kind of like greenish gray color.
Yes. Very
I know I'm old fashioned. Like, literally like
I didn't put a servo motor on it though.
Yeah, they're like definitely a serious obsession in my brain all the time. I had a girlfriend years ago. I just like lay in bed and she'd be like in the middle of the night and she's like, "What is that?" And like turn around, I'm like watching sewing machine videos at like my phone.
If
like,
your friends send you guys cat videos, your baby videos. All I get is industrial attachment. Hey, look at this.
Start sending those videos to us because honestly, like like what I do on my industrial is just like 1% of what it could do. Well, I don't even know. And I'm also like, I don't want to touch it and then like break something, you know, like
That's the thing.
I know. But then I'm like, can I find the replacement? I don't even like, I'm just like,
Well, that's the thing is that the industrial, especially the single needles you guys have, it's like, you know, if there's a computer issue with yours, Bethany, it's like, that's one thing. But if there's no computer issue, the worst you could do is knock the timing out, which with the work you guys do, I doubt it. Cause you know what you're doing. You know, it's like, that's how do you even do that? Like a lot of time you knock the timing out by being like, oh, I'm going to sew plastic today. And it's like, no, let's not do that.
Or wood.
There's like a few repairs that people can do basic stuff, which I want to do a whole video about with my buddy, Joseph at ABC Sewing Machine Company here in Los Angeles. I think it's 2100 South Main Street. I know that address. I'm obsessed with it. Right. Big green building on the left side if you're going south. And
you're like, you can't miss it.
But for any of your needs, like the bobbins and any of those kinds of things, ABC is who you.
And if I know you're not in Los Angeles, so if you call, you can order calling or you can go online to their website. They're super great people. I'll plug them all day long.
Yeah.
And so
we'll be sure to get their website from you and link them in our description of our podcast because. Even though we're home sewists, there is a pretty good size industrial sewing community, a part of that that makes bags. Like the bag making community is huge. Right. We've had so many of them on our podcast over the last year. And they every time they come on and they talk about what they've done and I see the bags that they've made and their love for their machine, it's given me this itch to get one. And so for the last year, I've been just searching and searching and searching, and one fell in my lap. And it's great that you mentioned that the accessories for my machine work with like other brands like Juki, because the lady that I bought it from, she makes bags and has a whole business making bags, and she has a whole like mini little shop of her own. And she's got, she just purchased 3 new Jukies for her shop. And so she was getting rid of this one and one other brother just to put everything onto the same platform and just have all new and expanding her space. And so that's why I got this from her. But she had mentioned when I picked it up that she didn't have one bobbin from her and the main foot that came on, like the general purpose foot, right, kind of situation that came with it. Right. And she didn't give me any of the other accessories because they work on her Jukies.
Right.
Yeah. And so you just reminded me that she had said that. It didn't connect in the moment because I was just so excited to get it. It wasn't not all the information didn't absorb at the time.
Right.
But when you mentioned that, I was like, you know, she did say something about how she kept those because they work on her other machines.
Oh, and so it's totally universal. Yeah.
I, you know, having, because I, my full-time job is with the Singer Viking, the Husqvarna Viking and Pfaff line of domestic machines, were very much branded to the brand. So when I was searching for accessories, I'm like looking for accessories specific to this machine. And I forget that industrial is a little more broad.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. It, you know, so, it's really about, you know, quality with the
machine. Yeah.
Because the assumption is that you're going to abuse this machine, you know? So, so they built them really tough, you know, they build them tough. So they're really good quality things. I mean, I definitely have my brands. I'm definitely a fiend for Juki, even if I'm probably spending more money than I should on that stuff. But I mean, I like the reliability and like my sewing machine company. It's like, I think finding that relationship between your supplier too is super important. You know, it's how many times I've broken something and just been like, hey, I need help. And they send somebody. And it's like, that's just not something that happens if you don't. Like,
yeah, no, in the home sewing, you have your dealer and you know,
you can be without your machine for weeks or months.
And it's like, I sew professionally. Like that, you know, you got to have the rental car loaner plan, something.
This is why we don't own just one sewing machine.
Exactly. I mean, that whole relationship is why I met Lynn, because I had a machine problem. And I was like, I told everybody at the shop, like, hey, you guys just lock up today because I got to go down and get this machine fixed right now. So brought it down there, fixed it, brought it back. But it was like 7 p.m. It's like, you know, everybody's at home. Yeah. So then that's how I found Lynn's husband. And so it's, you know, that's with that.
The stars aligned.
Yeah.
Well, it was the rest is history.
He said to my... my husband is my biggest supporter. He's like, you should follow my wife. And he's like, oh, who's your wife? And he looked, you know, he was like, oh, I already follow her. And, and so my husband, David, came back and was like, yeah, he already follows you. And I'm like, what the hell? And so I literally, it took like a couple of times of David, like, just come over, just come with me, just come down there. I mean, literally, at the end of my street. Like I can't not pass his place to leave the neighborhood.
Wow. And,
I don't even remember what the excuse was that he brought me down.
You know what is funny? Cause I always try to clear out stuff at the factory. People do, you know, 50 jeans and then I still have like a bolt of denim left. They don't want it back. They can't sew anything. So they'd like, just take it. So I end up with a lot of stuff you don't want. And so I would sell it for like nothing. Like, okay, why don't you come over? And it's oh, you know, she picked out like 20 bolts of fabric. How much do I owe you? It's like $20. It's like, oh, you sure? Yeah, $20. Take it, you know?
Just get it out of here.
Now that we're doing business together, all that stuff has come back to me at this point.
You never left you.
I was like, I've seen this before.
Yeah.
I look familiar.
Like, we'll have something, you know, and it's like, oh, we don't want to make a run to the district. He's like, do you have anything in your stash? And I'll bring it in. And he's I gave you this. You know what I mean? And it's like, perfect. Well, it's back. But yeah,
and
so
this
I
is
went
why
in
you keep it.
He had some fabric and he was like, yeah, he was going to sell. And I walked into his factory. I mean, and of course, I'm sitting there thinking, you know, that my husband's like, yeah, he has all these great machines. And I'm like, does he know? You know, and I walk in and it was like, oh, hold up. Wait a minute.
You're like, I've been driving past this for how long?
I'm literally like, I need to hang out with this. And we realized that I had called him looking up somebody that could do keyhole buttonholes for I was a stylist on Dancing with the Stars for years, and I was altering the suits for Tom Bergeron, and I needed to have keyhole buttonholes put in from having changed the sleeve. And I called around, and there was this one guy that was close by, but the way that the address changed, it made it seem like he was in a different city than what.
Yeah, it was like, it's weird because it's like one of those, the city that I was in and the city that Leonard in stopped like at like this middle house on the street.
Right, right.
Like,
yeah.
And because the city I was living in is unincorporated, it literally changes from like saying Sunland and Sunland and Burbank are in their own area, but my city is unincorporated, so it says Los Angeles. So it could be assumed that it was like, you know, a 30-minute drive, 40-minute drive right, away,
yeah.
Even though I was only like
a block away.
A 20-second walk. And I had called and I was like, you know, do you do keyholes? And he's like, yeah, I do. And he's like, come on down. And I literally, this is before the whole meet and, you know, cute meet, you know what I mean? And it was like, meet cute. Right. And it was like, we made that connection after the fact that it was literally like,
oh, wow.
Or that lady that called.
Wow. The universe kept putting you guys together.
Yeah.
And you're waiting. Like,
wake up. You're right here. Yeah. Your neighbors. Wild. Okay. I have a question for Alex.
Yeah.
Have you ever sewn on a domestic machine?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I started sewing when I learned on a brother. What is it?
Project Runway?
No. The same model, but you know, it was like the little, it's like light blue on the right side. I don't know what the model is, but you know, those basic brother machines, really $200 machines.
Yeah.
I learned how to use one of those, and that thing was
just a rite of passage, I think.
It was a good machine. I think it was one of those. My grandmother had gotten it for me when I was, when I was 14. She was the only one who knew how to sew, but didn't like doing it, so didn't bother to. She was like, I don't want to teach you how to do this, but I'll get you the machine. And so, and nobody in my family sews. In fact, my brother sews because I taught him how to sew. So then maybe this will keep carrying along now. But
yeah.
But the thing is, I started on that one. And as soon as I went to college, you know, we all were using industrial equipment, and then at work in Italy was all still industrial equipment. Home equipment was like impossible to find in Europe. And so I was using industrial equipment there. When I came back, I was so, you know, strong-headed about it being only industrial equipment that I started to gather all the, you know, equipment that I needed to be able to get the factory together. And that meant just eliminating, you know, all the things that you need out of a home sewing machine. You know, you need keyhole buttonholes. Great. Let's get a keyhole buttonhole. Or you need shirt buttonholes. Get a shirt buttonhole. You need zigzag. Let's get a zigzag. You need like cover stitching. Get cover stitching, overlocking, all the, so all of those like home sewing expanded into, you know, dozens of industrial machines. And at the time I had met Lynn, there were like 30 different machines. Now I have like 15 or something like that. Thank God. Cause it was like,
you've downsized.
Yeah. But this, but we had like a huge variety of equipment just because I was very obsessed with being able to do anything that I can do. And so now we can do, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff too. I mean, I was just spreading.
Okay. So since you've gone industrial, has Lynn gotten you to sew on a domestic sense?
Oh yeah. You know, I've had, when we do tailoring on location outside of the greater LA area there, you know, we do fashion week a lot of times in New York, like tailoring for that. And which we're doing again in September. And, you know, the prices, and this is my own, you know, personal weird sewing beef with New York, but it's like, they charge so much money for the rentals. And it's like, I know it's fashion week, but like $800 a day for like a single needle that's like a non-automatic that you like, get out of town.
That's absurd. Like, well, and if you want it,
like, you know, it's the supply and demand is the time. It's it's like, I get it, but it's like, I'm not going to eat the whole budget just so I can be a little more comfortable. Like,
it's that's cheaper just to leave one in New York in a storage unit.
You know, that was it was a plan of mine the last time we did it because I knew we were going to be back the next year. And I was I had a friend out there and I was like, hey, should I just like buy that friend like a little setup and then just steal it every time we're in New York? Yeah. But that again was like, okay, great. Now every time I do that, I have to get a U-Haul and get this all. And it just became so complicated.
Not easy to move.
They're not. And things like, I have all my industrial equipment on wheels, like we have the wheel legs, which I think are becoming more standard than they used to be. But, you know, so that I could move it. And I put a lift gate on my truck just so that I could, like, you know, transport everything by myself. We pitched so many things to try to get that there, but it was like I just had to let it go. And now I use the Baby Lock Brilliant when I do those jobs, which is it's a really good machine. You know, it's just
Yeah, we had Baby Lock actually sent us two machines, two Brilliants, because they have the pedal-less option to sew, and we started teaching Misty Diaz to sew pedal-less. We approached Baby Lock and said, listen, this is an adaptive feature that's not being, you know, marketed that way,
but that's true. It
absolutely is. And we approached several brands, and they were the ones kind enough to step up to the plate, and we use that on set all the time.
Yeah, the Baby
Lock. That's amazing.
It's a great machine. Yeah, it's a great machine.
I have the Presto too, and it has that same feature, which is really nice.
They're good. They're a good machine, and it's smooth. I mean, I still use it for this because we don't have a zigzag set up here, so I use it for zigzags. Mm-hmm. We occasionally do those, and it's a solid machine. Like I dig it, and I think that it's it works. So, and then it's easier to travel with than obviously an industrial machine.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
The handle.
That there. Yeah. Definitely out of my comfort zone, but it's not worth me being like, oh.
No, and our setup for those alterations, because we'll, how many do we have this year?
Yeah, we've got like 80 people to fit and dress. It's,
you know, overnight. So, you know,
we'll be
pulled up in some ballroom somewhere. Just
cranking it out.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, what are you guys working on next? I mean, you mentioned Fashion Week. You said you've got stuff going on in September, but let's first say you did something with the Rolettes.
Yeah.
So tell us about that, because you just wrapped that up, and then we'll talk about what your next adventure project is that you're going to be doing.
Okay. So we just finished up Rolettes, which is a group of wheelchair user dancers. These girls are really talented and just the really kindest, most graceful people you'll meet. And they put on an experience every year. It's called Rolettes Experience. It's this event where vendors come together, offer these resources for people with disabilities, particularly wheelchair users. They offer also dance classes. They offer
it's a whole women's kind of empowerment. Conference.
I love that.
Conference/retreat. It's a great way of putting it. And there's speakers. It's a really wonderful organization. Mm-hmm. And we came across them just, you know, we're within the disability community and activist community over here. And, you know, you meet people. And so I met Connor, who is one of the Rolettes there. And Connor came over, loved what we were doing here as well, and thought we should work together in some capacity. And so what we ended up doing was making custom jackets for the people who were, you know, attending. So you would buy from their merchandise booth their sweatshirts, their jackets, and what we would do is a chain stitch embroidery on there, put your name on there, put some of Chelsea's, who's the founder's, quotes on there. And so, but it's all customized by the color. So very engaging. You know, we got to talk about what we do, but we also got to promote the Rolettes. They got to advertise their, you know, their goods, and the people there got to have kind of like a tangible really connection to the event. And, you know, customized is always meaningful and nice. And we look forward to working with them even more as, you know, as time goes on. And they're they're really, really great organization. And they offer such a different view, I think, on what it means to help people within the community. I think a lot of times when we think about resources for disability, we immediately think brochure on like a, you know, a paralysis center or something, something very medical based. What they offer is here's fashion, here's a way to live, here's like lifestyle. Here's dance, here's lifestyle, here's here's workouts that are not like, you know, water aerobics. It's like actually like, hey, let me give you like a fun dance workout. Let me show you how to be cool. They're performing at World of Dance on Sunday. It's like, it's, you know, they're not so cool. Like, oh, that's cute. These girls are legit, you know, they're really legit.
Right.
So, you know, that was definitely a huge highlight for us. And you know, we encourage everybody, especially if you're a wheelchair user, to check them out. Cause they have, you know, they have online courses and everything.
And the founder, when she came through, Chelsea Hill, and we explained everything we do, and she offered us the opportunity to be at Rolex Experience. She also had us do her three outfits for throughout the event. So they had the welcome event, they had a disco night after party, and then they had the award ceremony. And Alex did a custom suit for the opening event. I did her disco look and a matching one for her 6-month-old daughter. And then,
so cute.
And then the awards, I did the awards gown too. And it was just so nice. It's, you know, writer strike and after, mm-hmm. you know, the strike going on, it affects me as a union mm-hmm. costume designer. And so to be able to have an opportunity to design and do custom and for her to literally be like, here's what I'm envisioning or the, you know, mm-hmm. the vibe of it. You guys do you. I mean, we got to have total creative freedom. That's
so fun.
Rarely happens. But yeah. it also helped us hone in and fine tune patterns specifically for wheelchair users mm-hmm. and create designs that, you know, can be done again by those who want them. So we, it was just a great experience all the way around. Great experience. And we absolutely love working with them and can't wait to hopefully do it again.
I mean, it's interesting that you bring that up about the patterns. And because I was thinking about this earlier when we were talking of, you know, you're working with brands to make their ready to wear adaptable, but right. there's still a group of sewists who sew from patterns, whether it's, you know, PDF patterns, projecting patterns, you know, the paper tissue patterns. And is there an opportunity to connect with some of those brands to release sewing patterns that are adaptive?
It's funny.
It's so funny to say that. No, we're actually, we actually just signed on as licensees. We're going to be doing the adaptive patterns for Simplicity. So
amazing.
That is now going to be, you know, kind of, and you know, we love the people of Simplicity. We love the work that they've been doing to try to push the adaptive out. They understand mm-hmm. so seriously the need for that. Mm-hmm. They also identify that this is a new thing. And sometimes, you know, you don't know what exactly the community mm-hmm. wants, and it's hard to be in touch with that community if you're not in it with it, mm-hmm. everybody.
Right.
And so they were really generous in saying, hey, why don't you guys come on board and work on this with us? And so we took control over doing that designing and
that's amazing.
And create the patterns, and they let us have the pattern control over that too, which is great because I'm a control freak. And it was like, because using the home sewing patterns, nothing but love to Simplicity, the big four, all you guys, great love, all you people. Those patterns are sometimes I look at them and I'm like, Lynn, this is wrong. Like this is wrong. And it's like,
and I'm like, blasphemy.
And I'm like, why is this shape like this? Like this, why is this cap look like this? You know, why is this so sharp? That's not good. To let you guys know, I'm going to be doing online tailoring classes. And
awesome.
Like never ease a sleeve cap in with that little thread. That is a no go. Never, ever, ever. It's wrong. It's like,
I keep seeing those videos.
Like, don't do those. You ease it as you sew. You turn your stitch length a little bit higher and you just shove the top of the sleeve in one stitch at a time. It eases it perfectly in a factory. If I ever saw anybody doing that little stitch to pull it in, that little gathering stitch, I'd lose my mind.
Two rows? Not two rows.
Oh, let's spend 40 minutes on stitches. We can make a t-shirt in like 8 minutes. Like, no, we should not be doing like this. If your cap is super sharp, it's not the right cap. It's like supposed to be lower. But that's my own, you know, obsession and issues, personal issues that I need to talk to somebody about. But yeah.
Therapy? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah,
we're working with the companies, and they're great for their and they're so wonderful for identifying that, you know, okay, these are so specific patterns. And in my own humbleness, it's like I have to forget everything I do know about patterns to do these adaptive patterns, because mm-hmm. the shapes are in some ways very different. We talk about like the pants that are very mm-hmm. different. Mm-hmm. They're going to come together differently. They're not something that you might look at as a, we're all experienced here. You might look at these patterns and go, okay, I don't know how these come together because mm-hmm. this is a new thing, but the way it fits is going to be kind of game changing for a lot of people. And so, and that's our goal, you know, is to make those things super,
because, attainable. Yeah, I mean, because pretty much every client that we ever have come through especially like a wheelchair user and like a wheelchair user who, you know, is in a wheelchair due to an accident. It's like, I would say more than half. It's like, we hear like, oh, my mom or my aunt just hems all my stuff, yeah, or mm-hmm. what I mean.
But if you can give mom or aunt a pattern to make something right. tailored right. for them, right. because they have someone in their life that already knows how to sew, or they are learning to sew right. or want to be able right. to sew their own things mm-hmm. and give right. them that ability. And I love that it's like, as we were talking, I was like, there's got to be a way to incorporate this into the sewing pattern industry. Yeah. I love that you've partnered with Simplicity. I feel like it's a good first step, but I feel like, you know, a lot of us use like indie pattern companies, and those are also becoming very much like right. a popular way to go about getting patterns as well. And so, right. you know, maybe educating the pattern industry, even on a smaller scale of like the indie pattern companies, of how they can maybe approach their patterns sometimes a little differently.
Sure.
Or maybe include in their instructions, like if you need to adjust, like there's always instructions in our indie right. patterns that say like, here's how to do a full bust adjustment, or how to do a right, seat right. adjustment, or a height adjustment. Well, how do you make it, like maybe there's a opportunity to teach adjustments to regular patterns for
right.
disabled. Well,
it's, you know, it yeah. can't even be just like we do with brands and offering the service to brands. It's like, you know, to indie pattern companies, it's like, you know, they could do the same thing to say,
yeah.
if you want to do this pattern the adaptive way, you know, you can reach out to some yeah. adaptive, and we can literally say, oh, okay, you know,
we, like this is like how to, we would make those adjustments right, to right, make it work.
Right. We'd like to have those, I mean, the patterns, you know, we'd like to have those things bleed into the rest of the big yeah. four pattern companies, you know, things mm-hmm. like shirts mm-hmm. can be adapted with that high low that Linda right. mentioned.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm. And exactly. that can be drawn onto the patterns with your crazy mm-hmm. lines on the tissue paper with the dots that mm-hmm. make me like, mm-hmm. oh, whoa, what am I doing? You know, those lines can be drawn on there. You don't need to cut them, but you could,
yeah.
you know, and, right. and that's the thing is like, literally that's all it is. It's
right.
so simple. It doesn't even need to be a part of the pattern, you know, the alteration on there, like you talked about, you know, the bust adjustments, there's only about five that you have to do in order to cover the vast majority of the right. needs. Maybe not perfectly, but that's where your own sewing experience comes in and making those,
yeah.
you know, how long to make the leg zipper, kind of your choice, you know, but mm-hmm. you don't need to change a pants pattern at all to make it accessible for somebody with a prosthetic or a leg bag to be able to wear it. You can put an mm-hmm. invisible zipper in the seam or in the inseam. Your discretion at your prosthetic or medical device as to how long that invisible zipper might be, but it's that's all it is. It's that, you know, mm-hmm. you don't need to change anything. You just need to know that it's possible, and that's
mm-hmm. yeah.
that's part of that's so that's half of our business is just making that
just clear. Educating the possibilities, right?
Right. right.
Yeah. So what's next for Sewn Adaptive? Oh, Lynn, I think you were going to talk about that. Sorry, yeah. we kind of went on a different tangent, no, but it brought back something I was thinking about.
We are doing New York Fashion Week. We are doing Runway of Dreams again, which we are super excited. We love Runway of Dreams. Runway of Dreams is what made Sewn Adaptive a thing. It was from that experience. So we're excited to get to do that. This will be our third show with them. And we're excited because we always make our outfits for the red carpet and everything. And this year's going to be exceptional.
Oh, it's going to be wild. Yeah. Get ready.
If you guys are not following Sewn Adaptive on Instagram, and then also follow Alex and Lynn individually as well, the things that they do, and that's how I saw the videos of like the roulettes and everything. It's so fun to see all of that. Your whole setup of personalizing, customizing things there was really cool. So I'm excited to see what you guys are going to be doing.
We're getting really, he's more so than me. We're really getting into chain stitching. We initially got the machine. We promised ourselves that it was going to be for our creative outlet only, like so that we made sure to take time to you know, do that for ourselves. And that lasted about 10 minutes.
I was about to say that didn't last long, did it?
Yeah. And I mean, we're both totally into it. And it is really on trend. So
yes, it is.
So people are, we're putting the word out there. We will do other events, with the chain stitch and single needle setup, because it's just fun. And it makes for a, you know, like you said, it makes for a really cool connection within the event. I'm trying to think, what else are we doing? He's going to be teaching online. Can't really go into that too much. I am going to be a Nomi. I am a Nomi licensee. My first design comes out in spring.
Awesome. Congrats. Yeah. So we've had a lot of Nomi pattern designers on our podcast over this past year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited about that. I tell Alex, I think my biggest excitement around that, besides the fact that I'm over 50 and the big four historically has not done enough for those that are over 50, is that I'm super excited to have my daughter, who I taught to sew, who is actually a bag maker and has a company that grew from sewing her own, to have her and my granddaughters go to the fabric store and pull out Nana on an envelope.
Oh, that's so sweet.
The thing that I'm most looking forward to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun when I go to the store and I look at those patterns and I'm like, I know these people.
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked to them on the podcast, but several of them I've had the opportunity to meet at like sew expos or different events across the country. And I'm just like, it's just such a fun community. And I'm so excited to see your face be a part of that lineup. That's going to be so cool.
I'm super excited.
Just go ahead and pencil it in. Next spring, when your pattern releases, we'll have you back on. We want to hear all about it and your process. Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, I mean, this has been super fun chatting with you guys. I appreciate you taking so much time with us. We're excited to see what you're doing. I'm so glad that we have introduced our audience to both of you, but also your mission with Sewn Adaptive. I think it's so important, and I'm so honored that you guys were here to chat with us about it.
Well, this has been really fun. Thank you.
Yeah. So next week, guys, we have a new podcast with just Ashley and I, and it's technically our 52nd podcast. So it's our 1 year almost, and it's our last one of this first year. We're so excited about it. We have some really fun things planned for the new year. We've been brainstorming a lot about it, and our next podcast is going to be a year in review. We're going to take some time to really just look back at all we've done, all the amazing guests that we've had on, the topics, the engagement from our audience as well. And so we're excited about that. So be sure to tune in next week. As always, you can watch our podcast on YouTube. So be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel there. Be sure you're also signed up for our monthly newsletter. That newsletter is about to get ramped up with some amazing content this coming new year that we're going to be kicking off. So you want to be sure you subscribe to our newsletter. And then, of course, you can always stream us on all the major streaming channels for podcasts. Okay, until next week and this big 52. I'm so excited. This episode has been a long time coming. We're really excited about it. And until then, guys, thank you so much, Alex and Lynn, for being a part of our episode
thank
today.
You.
Helping
thank
us you. Wrap up a wonderful year. I hope you guys have a great week and happy sewing.
Bye.